Tampa MX Network production.
A cerebral and experienced look into the racing action from the week that was. This is Industry Seating with Jason Thomas. Presented by Pirelli Tires, Guts Racing, Plum Creek Funding, Pro Glow Wash, Works Connection, Bass Foundry, TL Speed Shop, Concept Coatings Design Co., Grandstone Boots, and Fly Racing.
Welcome to the Industry Seating Podcast. My name is Jason Thomas, and yes, we are a little delayed on this podcast. I apologize. I have been all over the world, leaving St. Louis. I went home for a day or two. Then I made the journey over to Italy first, then Sardinia for the MXGP race over there. Those of you that watched would have heard my voice in the booth with Paul Malin all weekend. And then made the trek back on Monday from Sardinia to Rome to Amsterdam to Seattle to Boise. Got back Monday night, 22 hours later. Was in the office Tuesday, then flew to Boston on Wednesday in preparation for this weekend's Foxborough Supercross. So it's been a bit of a whirlwind for me. No complaints. I mean, this is the life I would choose. It's just been, I am dragging a little bit. But feeling great this morning and ready to talk about what we saw in St. Louis, what we're expecting here in Foxborough, and just overall trends. This podcast is going to feel a little bit different than the past because it's not immediately following that St. Louis race. You know, it's typically so reactionary to the race itself. And yeah, it's been, I don't know, 11 days or something. So I'm not going to get 12 days. I'm not going to get too crazy on just immediate reactions, but it be kind of what I think after I've had time to kind of absorb it. These guys have been riding outdoors and testing, you know, all week last week. They're probably back on the Supercross grind this week. But yeah, just, you know, it's just a different feel because I'm more thinking towards Foxborough than I am thinking back on St. Louis. MXGP though, quickly was a great time. Those guys are going really fast. It's probably obvious for many, but there are still, I'm sure, listeners out there that don't follow MXGP, and the only real exposure they have to them is Motocross the Nations. But just be sure that their level is very high. You know, their motorcycles are very advanced because they don't have a production rule. So they're pushing the envelope over there. And it's good to see that the state of global Supercross and Motocross is really strong. There's a lot of industry involvement, OEM involvement, and those guys are being really aggressive. So it was a very productive trip for me. I will be back over there in late July for the Belgian GP, which is always at Lommel. For those of you who know that track, it's incredibly sandy and just a brutal experience for the riders. But it's also a track they practice on all the time. And all the race teams are based right there outside of a couple. Literally like on the backside of the property. So it's, you know, it's kind of the networking event of the year for many. And that's why I'll be there. And of course it fits into a weekend off in the schedule. So before we jump into this, let's thank the sponsors again. Pirelli Tires, Guts Racing, Plum Creek Funding, Concept Coatings Design Co. There's a promo code CONCEPT10 over there. Works Connection, promo code is JT23. Check out all their great new products. Seems like they have products coming out each and every week. Pro Glow Wash, TL Speed Shop, Grantstone Boots, and Fly Racing. And I'll get into a little bit more in depth of those sponsors later. But thank you to all of them for being on board and a part of this podcast. Many of them have been on since the very beginning. And can't thank them enough for believing in me and what we're doing. So 250 East, we're back. And it's been the West for a few rounds. So, you know, I think it's been a nice mix because I haven't gotten kind of bored too often, maybe a couple of weekends. It's more of when I see, or when we switch coasts, I'm like super excited. That's when I know that I needed a change. And that's how I feel about this East Coast. You know, the Deegan McAdoo Vial battle has been great, you know, and Deegan fell off the back just a tiny bit, but I don't think there's anything really to panic about. You know, the riding has been great. You think about what Indy was for him. He was right in the mix to win until an unfortunate race three of that Triple Crown took him out of it. He was tied for the lead going into race three. So I think with another couple of weekends off, I think he'll be back to 100%. Doesn't mean he's going to win, but I just think it's been a recovery from that wrist injury. And I feel a bit vindicated because I didn't think he was anywhere near 100% going into Detroit. And I had people pushing back on that and whatever, but I didn't have any proof to really back it up other than just kind of what I was seeing and hearing. And also, I always try to lean on the experience I've had with these situations. You know, I feel the same way about Tomac's injury going into round one. I kept saying, like, don't expect a lot. Don't expect a lot in January and February. You know, I'm not trying to say I was right. I'm not here to, like, you know, have a victory lap. That's not what it's about. But, you know, experience, there is really no replacement for experience of going through these things. And when you talk about riders coming off an injury, it's one thing to be back and to be able to do a fast lap and ride pretty well, you know, at the practice track and whatever. That's one thing. But being your best self over the course of a whole main event and the fitness and the mental, everything kind of aligning to be your best self for a performance, going up against riders who were not injured, didn't have a break, kept building, kept getting better, kept increasing their momentum. That's a really hard thing. And I don't know that there's ever a way to understand it fully or to be able to explain the dynamic of it without having gone through it. You know, it's just one of those things where sure, you can talk about it and whatever, but do you really understand what it's like, or have you ever lived it? You know, and I'm sure that excludes a lot of people listening, but that's the only way I felt capable of making the comments I did about both Deegan and Tomac was it's just impossible to negate the lack or the loss of momentum and loss of progress that you have with a big injury like that. And we're seeing those guys improve and get better. Deegan should be, you know, better than I think we saw him even in Indy. And that's really the point of this diatribe that I've gone into, is that look for him to come out swinging this weekend. You know, I like the fact that he went out and rode with Roczen. You know, he is willing to travel, go wherever the opportunity provides. You know, remember him going to ride with Tomac in the off season before the wrist injury. You know, there, some of them aren't able to do that. I get it. Like, Star has this rule where you need to be there riding, but I think Deegan could be the outlier to that rule, right? They're going to let him do what he wants because they understand he is probably the future of that team. And if you go to them and say, hey, we want to go ride with Ken Roczen and a lot of talented guys, how do you say no to that? You know, like, I don't understand why anybody would say, no, that sounds like a terrible idea. Of course it's a good idea. So kudos to them for allowing that to happen. You know, Cameron McAdoo is the points leader, and it's hard to not cheer for Cameron McAdoo. You know, I'm not saying he has to be your favorite rider, but he does things the right way. He's a really nice kid. There is no real ego there. You know, I've heard from people commenting and emailing that, like, he's trying too hard in the podium interviews. I don't have a problem with that comment. I understand that maybe it comes across as over the top, but I genuinely think he is excited. You know, he knows what it's like to be on the outside looking in. You know, this was a guy that was driving Christian Craig's motorhome a few years ago and out of the sport as far as competitive, you know, being a competitor anyway. So to be back here, the points leader on Mitch Payton's Pro Circuit Kawasaki, in line to win a title, I don't think you can really poo-poo anything as far as excitement or gratitude that he feels or says. So I'm cheering for him. It doesn't mean I'm not cheering for other guys too, but I really like him and what he's about as a person. And when he does well, I think it's heartwarming. You know, I understand everybody has their own favorite riders. That's cool. That's what sport is, and that's what we all, you know, we all do that in every sport. But it's hard to not cheer for Cameron when he does well. Tom Vial, you know, he's riding this championship fight. You know, I don't think we can discount him whatsoever. The improvements he's made from year one to year two have been very impressive. And really the question I have with him is, you know, he has so much championship experience. He's a two-time MX2 world champion. That counts for something, but how much of that is transferable? And when I say that, I mean from that experience, being in motocross on a world stage and understanding how to manage a championship, how much of that experience can he take and apply it to Monster Energy Supercross, different discipline, different series, different continent? I don't know. You know, I'm sure some, but I've heard others say like, well, he's been here and done it. Like he knows how to win championships. That's where I'm questioning is it exactly the same? I don't know. I don't have a incredibly hard opinion of it. I'm just more posing the question is it the same thing? Because the racing's different. You know, it's these sprint races. It's just a different thing. So I guess I'm not on the camp of, yeah, no problem. This is exactly the same thing. He knows what to do. He'll be able to handle this better than everybody else. I mean, I guess maybe, you know, I don't know. We'll find out. You know, I'm just more wait and see versus I think some are all in and this is his championship because of that experience. And I'm not quite there yet. I just think it's going to take a little bit more before he has every piece of the Supercross puzzle figured out. The other thing I would add to that is for Deegan, like he won the SMX championship, right? So you could say, well, he has championship winning experience too. I'm not saying that. I'm saying if you were trying to push back or play devil's advocate to the VL thing, you know, Deegan was your SMX, you know, the inaugural SMX 250 world champion. So there's a lot of push-pull. That's what makes all this so great and so interesting. But let's just see how it goes. And we'll look back and say, okay, well, we should have seen it. That the, you know, the writing was on the wall. I'm not a fortune teller. I'm just more here to analyze it and just alongside you. I love this stuff and it's very interesting to me. So let's jump to the 450 class. And, you know, Jet Lawrence, he's under the gun, right? And it's impossible for us to gauge how much pressure he's feeling, you know, in his own mind. But I look back on the Birmingham round. And when we were leaving Birmingham, I was like, oh, man, these guys are in a lot of trouble. And then it only compounded in Indy. But I just remember seeing Birmingham and Indy, just his mindset and the way he was kind of looking at the championship. And I guess Indy would be more compelling case because the points lead had gone out to 21 over Webb. And you could just see how relaxed he was on the podium in his interviews. He's like, oh, cool. You know, and I believe in his mind, he's like, I got these guys. Like it's over. You know, I have it figured out. The points lead is going to a big number now and momentum has firmly swung in my direction. Well, that was only a few short weeks ago and it feels like everything's changed, you know, and it's not like he forgot how to ride. Like it's impossible to say at Seattle, he wasn't the best rider, but he got third and he gave some points back. And then I think St. Louis wasn't his fault. You know, he was tied for the win. He most likely gets second overall in that race the way it kind of went. But he adds points back to the lead. You know, instead of 16, maybe it goes to 18, 20, whatever. You know, you think he probably beats Webb in the overall if he stays where he was. I don't know. You know, even if it didn't go to plan and Webb beat him overall, it's hard for me to say he doesn't get like third overall in that race, right? So maybe he gives back 2 points to Webb on the night. And instead of 16, it's 14. It's just a different feeling than it is right now at 8 points. And it really feels like Webb has had life breathed back into his program. And I don't think that's a stretch to say at all. I think it's pretty obvious, to be honest. So where does Webb go from here? You know, I think he just has to maintain this and right and lean into this and put pressure. And does he start playing games with Jet? Does he start, you know, messing with him in practice? Does he start yelling at him on the starting line? Does he employ any of the things that we've seen him do over the years trying to get an angle? And remember, you know, Jet's a kid. We've seen Jet have mentally and emotionally fragile moments. You know, you think about the meltdown he had in San Diego I don't think he's impervious to Webb playing games. You know, the tough part is that Jet has the speed edge, and it's hard to play games with somebody who can just simply go faster than you. You know, I don't know how else to really state it than that, but in my experience, if someone can just go faster than you and you're trying to play games with them, they're just going to look at you and go, well, I don't know what your problem is, but you can't go as fast as I can. Just stay out of my way. You know, that's how I would try to look at it if I was Jet, is kind of give Webb his respect and say, yeah, man, you are a hell of a competitor and you're hanging in there and you're really hard to kind of finish off. But in the end, you're simply not as good as I am at this, you know, and I'm not, you have to understand in this podcast, I'm not saying that. I'm saying if I was Jet, that's how I would approach this mentally, is just say, cool, like you're a two-time champ. You deserve a lot of respect. But honestly, you're not quite as good as me. And the future is mine. And I got to clean it up. You know, Seattle was my fault. St. Louis, really not. Doesn't matter. The results are what they are. But I got to get things back on track here and prove why I have still had the red plate. Why everyone's pointing to me saying that I'm going to be the guy for the next however long. I need to get back to proving that out. So again, championship, this is why championships are so hard to win. There's so many things that can go on that they don't have to be your fault, right? Barsha absolutely T-boning Jet cutting down, opening the door for that to happen. That whole thing, that's what racing is. Every time the gate drops, there's an element of chance and unpredictability that goes into all of this. So we will see, you know, and I wanted to get into Webb's strategy. You know, I just told you what I thought Jet should do, right? Is just try to close him out. You know what I mean? Just lean on him and say, you're not as good as me. And I'm going to show you why. Every time we go on the racetrack, every qualifying session, every heat race, and in the main events, I'm going to continue to show you that you're not as good as I am at this game anymore. You know, maybe once upon a time you were the best guy, but that time has come and passed. That's what I do if I'm Jet. Now for Webb, it's a completely different thing. And I believe he has been in this bend but don't break strategy throughout the whole season. You know, he got a win at A2 in the Triple Crown with 2-2-5 finishes, nothing dominant. Arlington, he gets a win, but you can't say he was the fastest guy. Jet was kind of managing the lead until he made that mistake. So it's been a hang around, don't do anything drastic, take opportunities when they're there, make up points when the door's open type thing. And if you watch other sports, and I'm sure lots of you do, you know, I'm a big football fan, you think about how do teams that they know going in they're a big underdog, they don't have the talent, they are outgunned, and they don't want to get into kind of a track meet. They don't want to get into a scoring battle of who can score the most points. That's not what they want to do. So how do you approach winning a game like that? All you try to do is stay close and get it into the fourth quarter, and anything can happen. It's such a common strategy for teams. And you think about, I think about a team like Rutgers playing Ohio State, or I don't know, pick, you know, whatever team playing Alabama, right? Playing the best team, you know, you're going to give it everything you have. And all you're trying to do is hang around. Just give yourself a chance in the fourth quarter. Don't be sitting there in the fourth quarter starting and you're down 30. You know what I mean? If you're down 7, if you're down 10, you have a shot. The ball bounces a certain way. You're there to make the most of it, and you can shock the world. That's the way I see Cooper Webb going about this championship right now, is just be there late and allow things to unfold your way. And doesn't mean it's going to happen, right? Like, he's still down 8 points. He's not the fastest guy. You know, those are really two really strong reasons for why he won't be able to get it done. But if you give yourself a chance, that's exactly what you have, is a chance. And like, Tomac doesn't have it anymore. Sexton doesn't have it anymore. Roczen doesn't have it anymore. All those guys are out, in my opinion. They're out of this championship. So Webb is now the guy that has to hope against hope. You know, if the door comes open again in Foxborough, smash your way through it. Make the most. Get every possible point you can, and then just hope that Jet crumbles. Jet makes a mistake. Jet doesn't have a good performance. He doesn't ride well. Anything. anything that could possibly happen. You just have to hope that that's going to go your way. So that's kind of how I view it. Doesn't mean I'm right, but that's how I view the dynamic between the two. Eli Tomac wins. That was amazing, right? Like, you know, I really try to check myself on saying that I saw things coming. You heard me do it with the Tomac and Deegan injuries, whatever. But I really did see something different with Eli Tomac on Friday. And if you were at the live show in St. Louis, you heard me talk about it quite a bit, that he just looked different on press day. And I hope I talked about it on my Patreon podcast, or I do a Patreon podcast. It's patreon.com/industryseating every Saturday morning. I hope I talked about it on there. I'm almost positive I did, because it was a pretty stark difference watching him on press day and how aggressive he was, how confident he looked. And I wasn't sure if that was going to translate into Saturday. That was really the only question, because if they held the race on Friday, I knew he would be on the podium and in the battle to win. There was no doubt about that in my mind. It was unquestionable. Anybody who would have argued, I would have, okay, let's carve out some time, because I'll argue until nightfall if you'd like to. And then he backed that up, you know, and it made me look smart. Fine. I look stupid lots of times. Anybody that knows me well could probably point out several times where I've looked really dumb. But that in that moment, I looked smart, because I just knew what I was seeing, and I didn't know why. It came out after the race in the press conference. He said he'd been dealing with an ankle injury. Okay, well, maybe share that with us. Maybe let us know that, so we don't all scratch our heads endlessly about what's wrong with you. But he certainly looked back to form, and I think with another weekend off, he will look great again here in Foxborough. But he was different, you know, and the question I have, that's the analysis. The question I have is the starts were back, and why were the starts back? You know, was that correlated to him being confident that he could win again? You know, the ankle was better, which led to him being able to ride to his potential, which then gave him confidence to go for the starts again. And a lot of that is subconscious. You know, I've had it happen myself, and you think about races where you know you're supposed to do well and you should be good, and there's no reason you shouldn't win or have a great result. So that leads into confidence, and you know you got to get a good start. So you're just so locked in, and the start comes, you know, and it's just, it's really hard to explain logically, but it is a thing, and it very much happens it certainly happened for me, and I'm assuming for most riders, is when you expect to do well, you think you're going to do well, the start kind of follows. And I guess I'm asking, was that the same for Tomac? Because his starts have been terrible most of the season. I mean, just awful. And then he's just got it nailed in St. Louis after this incredible Friday. It feels a little bit too convenient to me to not be the same. Also, what does this mean for him racing pro motocross? What does this mean for him racing in 2025? You know, we don't have answers to either of those questions. I'm sure there's endless conversations going on right now. And I know that Monster Yamaha Star Racing is pressuring him. And I don't mean like pushing him like harshly, but I guarantee they're asking like every day, hey, we get an answer. We got to do something, right? Because they want him to race, but they can't give him an endless amount of time and miss opportunities for other riders. Like, they just don't have that same level or flexibility that they had last year. So I would expect answers on those questions sooner rather than later, because I think they are leaning on him and basically telling him, hey man, like, we want you, but we can't wait forever. Like, we can't have you come to us and say, I'm out in 2 months, and leave us with very little options or no room to pivot. As far as 25, like for 2024 pro motocross, I think it's got to be any day. I'm actually very surprised it hasn't already been announced one way or another. Maybe they already know, or, you know, I think the telltale sign would be, did he do a lot of testing this prior week, and how did that go? I don't know. I bet we'll get answers this weekend. Was he testing motocross or not? But, you know, it's almost the middle of April here. We're 6 weeks out from the first pro motocross race. There is no time to waste for that conversation. So I hope he races. He adds a lot to both series. I do think he'll be back in 2025. That's my prediction. He will be back. for 2024 Pro Motocross. I don't have a strong opinion. I don't know. We'll wait and see. The thing I would tell you is that if I would have more confidence if we saw just a bunch of photos of him testing people, you know, spy photos, people talking about it. He was in California testing motocross and we all heard about it. That would give me much more confidence that he was going to be on the line at Fox Raceway. Chase Sexton, he's kind of in no man's land here. You know, he wasn't terrible in St. Louis, but it wasn't great. You know, it wasn't Seattle for him. And it just feels like he's kind of out of the championship now. You know, I guess chaos could ensue and he could get back in it, you know, DNFs and whatever could drag him back into it. But it just kind of feels like he's lost the championship edge. You know, the conversation's not going to be circling around or centering around him being in the championship fight. Doesn't mean he can't win races. That's for damn sure. But, you know, I pose the question, big picture with Chase Sexton, has the trend changed? Now think about summer of 22, think about Supercross 2023. Everyone, including myself, was saying Chase Sexton is the fastest guy. He has so much speed to burn. Can he figure out how to keep that speed on two wheels and harness it? If he does, he is going to be a big problem for anybody, including Jet Lawrence. Has that trend changed permanently? That's my question. And I don't know. I don't know. I'm sure he would hate me posing that question, but I think it's a fair one. I really do. If you are not in his camp or you're not on his team, I really believe it's a fair question to pose because it does not look the same right now. He's riding well. You know, I don't confuse the two. But last year, there was no doubt about who the fastest raw speed rider was. It was Chase Sexton, unequivocally. There was no arguing it. Anybody that would have argued out would just immediately disregard it, you know? And that's not the case anymore. So I don't know what to point to. Is it the bike is different? Is he less confident in pushing the bike? Is he trying to be less erratic? You know, is it a conscious decision by him? Like, those are all questions I don't have answers to, but the end result, I think it's clear he's not as good as he was last year. He's just not. And I don't know what to do with that or about that, but it's just something that I've noticed and it's something to watch moving forward. Last note I have on the 450s is AC. Adam Cincirillo announced his retirement at the end of Monster Energy Supercross. Kind of knew this was coming. You know, I didn't know the time frame. I didn't know if he would try to race pro motocross, but it just felt like this was in the cards for him. Man, it has been so tough with him with injuries and the shoulder thing and the arm and the grip strength. And it's just been this never-ending story for like the last 2 years. And it almost feels like merciful that it's coming to an end for him because I just know he's been struggling with it so much mentally and emotionally, not being able to ride his best, not being able to perform to the level that he feels – is appropriate or what he's expected to be on. You know, he's very well paid and with payment comes expectation. There is no other way to say it than that. And when you aren't able to perform at a high level, you feel like you're letting a lot of people down. And I'm not speaking for him. You know, that's my analysis of it is that on some level, he feels like he's just not giving them their money's worth. And that's a hard thing to deal with week in and week out. If you feel like you're letting people down and you're not holding up your end of the bargain. That's difficult to just constantly have that pressure all the time. So I think there's going to be a little bit of relief in this decision for him. And we'll kind of see what's next for him. You know, I know he has aspirations for television and broadcasting, whatever. I hope I still have a job. I don't know, right? I'm trying to do the best job I can. I love what I'm doing and I hope to do it for a very long time, but I don't make those decisions, you know, and we'll see where Adam fits into that picture, how they work him in, if they do at all. I don't know any of that stuff. You know, I'm not privy to their long-term aspirations or his. But yeah, I hope it, you know, him coming into that realm doesn't preclude me from staying in that realm. That would be a huge bummer for me, but we'll see what life brings. But Adam is a great guy, and it's truly been an honor to watch him race for the last I don't know, 20 years, longer than that. He's a great kid and always has been. And, I think it's easy for a lot of people to look at this and say, man, he didn't live up to what he could have. I don't look at it that way. I think he's had a tremendous career as a 250 national champion. He almost won a 250 Supercross championship. You know, he was, I think, revered by many for how good he was for a very long time. His amateur career was honestly second to none, really. And yeah, class act on and off the racetrack. So congrats, Adam, on a great career. And I'm sure whatever the future brings is going to be, it's going to be better for you being a part of it. So the last thing before we jump into the power rankings, we will do power rankings again. Don't worry. But I want to thank the sponsors again. I know your favorite part of this. Pirelli Tires, check them out. They won MXGP. Shocker, they kind of dominate MXGP, to be honest. Great job by Pirelli running that scoop tire that they have. Is man, it is a force over there. And they got to use that at Rio Osardo. Guts Racing, power. They have seat covers and graphics for power sports, e-bikes, and the actual seats for all these, Kawasaki's, Betas. They have lots of things for Sarans. Everybody's on these Sarans now, those e-bikes. Check those out. Plum Creek Funding, listen, rates are terrible. They're really high. Historically, they're not that bad. But if, you know, comparatively over the last 5 years, they're really high. And last show, I was kind of making fun of Steve a little bit because Plum Creek Funding sponsors the Moto60 show. And Steve was talking about, you know, refinancing. Nobody's refinancing at these rates. You're just not. You're not going to. So this is really more for people that are relocating, buying a new house. Maybe your family is growing. Any of those things, you have to buy a new house. You don't. The rates are almost irrelevant. You got to buy a house anyway. So reach out to Zach Morris at Plum Creek Funding and find out what the best options are. You know, can you buy down your loan? Can you put more money down? There are lots of tricks to the trade that can save you a percent or two. The military gets deals like this as well. So you really just want to find out how can you make the most of a difficult situation if you are buying a house. And Zach knows all of those ins and outs and angles that can at least save you some money anyway. Concept Coatings Design Co. Benji Dawson has started a great company here in America. It's been going on in Australia for a long time, but he's expanded that to the U.S. Whether you want anodizing, laser engraving, Cerakote, go on their Instagram and check out all the great work they're doing. They're helping like Destin Cantrell and all these racers build out super custom trick motorcycles. They can dial your bike into. I've been speaking about they have their race shop set up. So if you wanted a place to be in California, full setup, you'd have a race bay. They can do the bike builds for you. You can do your own. They're really offering a service. What I love is that it's not available anywhere else. You know, it is a very unique thing. And having that edge, I think, is a big part of business. So maybe you're making plans for fall 2024, winter 2025, or winter 24, spring 25. Check this out, because if you want to go to California and spend a few months there, this is a great place to do it. I don't know that there are better ways to really do it than this. Like having your own full race shop setup is not something that most people have access to in California. Also, there's a Concept 10 promo code to use there that'll save you some money. Works Connection, they have those Yamaha foot peg mounts. They have that new chain gauge tool. They have all new products for the Kawasaki 2024 Kawasaki 450. They have products for the new Stark Varg. And they keep innovating, keep adding products to the collection. So check those guys out, worksconnection.com. Promo code is JT23 and save yourself some money at checkout. TL Speed Shop, fly into Phoenix. Their shop is located about 30 minutes away in Wickenburg, Arizona. And you can do whatever. You can drive trophy trucks. You can go on side-by-sides. They are a one-stop shop. And you can basically design your own adventure, right? Do you want to go to Baja? Do you want to go to Sedona? Do you want to go out in the desert towards Vegas? What do you want to do? They have everything set up. They are the experts in this arena, and they can dial you in immediately. So check those guys out, tlspeedshop.com. And if you need the phone number or whatever, reach out to me. But you can also go on TL Speed Shop on their Instagram and look at all their pictures and the tours they have available, all those things. ProGlow Wash. The question I have is, why would you use anything for your dirt bike or street bike or side-by-side that's not power sports formulated? Why? I don't even get it. Walgreens and buy something that's off the shelf that is built to wash your counter or clean your house. Don't be silly. Go to ProGlow Wash, buy their product. They're motorsports and power sports enthusiasts. They race cars, motorcycles. They're super into this stuff. They come to races. They've been, you know, their family's been racing dirt track for, you know, decades, right? So why would you not buy something that is in the same realm and the same thought process and formulated for what we're doing? It's that simple. So check out ProGlow Wash. Grantstone boots. Got to wear those on Tuesday night. Went to dinner, my one night at home this week. And what a great product. Their sneakers are, the coolest new addition. Because for me, I don't want to wear boots to work all day long, but I can wear the sneakers, especially as we're going into spring and summer, and they're really comfortable. So check out GrantStoneShoes.com, and you can go on their Instagram and check out all their great products. They have such a wide collection now. They have women's products, they have loafers, they have the new sneakers. They have so many things that may fit your need, you know, whether it's office or nightlife or whatever. Check those guys out. Last but not least, Fly Racing. FlyRacing.com, at FlyRacingUSA on social media. We will have our athletes back in action this weekend. Hopefully they can do something for us, but check out all the great products. That Formula S helmet is, in my mind, revolutionary, changes the whole industry. Smart helmet. There is really nothing else out there that can even come close to that. So go check those products out. Thanks for listening to the sponsors. Thank you to all the sponsors for being part of this. Now let's jump into the power rankings here and wrap this baby up. At number 10 is J. Coop, and he's kind of been hovering between 8 and 10. You know, it hasn't been anything phenomenal. He's had flashes, and that's what's kept him in the top 10. You know, he had that fifth place in Birmingham. He was battling up there for a long time. That's where I want to see him get back to. You know, he got that great start in St. Louis, and then he crashed and kind of blew it. But I do believe in J. Coop's ability. He's impressed me, to be honest. Being able to go as fast as the fastest riders in the world on a 450, I wasn't sure. I know he's incredibly good. I just wasn't sure how it would translate to the 450. But I think he's put those worries to rest in 2024. Number 9, Justin Barcia. And it hasn't been a good year. I think he would tell you that. You know, they've struggled with the bike all season long. He hasn't been happy. You know, the St. Louis thing, gosh, that was just catastrophic. What else can you say? You know, I don't think you've ever seen Justin Barcia be as apologetic as he was after St. Louis. And that should really tell you all you need to know. You know, if he had any ill intent or was going in there to make contact, he wouldn't be apologizing like that. He just wouldn't. That's not who he is. So to me, his reaction to it told you all you needed to know about what his intentions were going in there, right? It was just, he misread the situation. He didn't expect Jet to cut down. I think he made a mistake kind of committing to the line he did and protecting against Freezy. But his apology and his demeanor should, to me, that was the telltale sign about he didn't mean to do it. Now, you could say he was in the wrong and any of that, you can bat at him, sure. But to me, intent is the most important thing here, because if he intended to do something like that, it would be unforgivable. Like, just, yeah, suspend him immediately. You know, if you're going to hit somebody that hard on purpose, you should be suspended, in my opinion. But that's not what this was. Number 8, Hunter Lawrence gets his first podium in St. Louis. Great job to him. He looks like he's getting better. You know, he wins that heat race in Seattle. He gets on the podium in St. Louis, albeit with penalties. I understand. Think about the penalties in race 2. Think about Jet getting T-boned in race 3. I get it. But in the end, we're judged off results. He gets a bonus check for third, and the riding has simply been better. It has. End of story. The riding has been better. Number 7, Jason Anderson. I don't really have much to say about Jason Anderson. There's really not a lot here. You know, it's been okay. He's had podiums this season, but this isn't what it was at the beginning of the season. Remember how good he was early on? We haven't seen that in a very long time from the 21. So I don't know what to make of that. I don't have any answers for you on Jason Anderson. Number 6 is AP. And he was riding pretty well. Remember how he was battling there at the front? Was it race 1 or race 2? Was really impressive in St. Louis. So signs of life from the number 7. And he's, I mean, there's no question this has been the best year of his 450 career. So to see him kind of having flash late as we're kind of going down the stretch is, yeah, it's encouraging. You know, we're all AP fans. If you're not, I don't know what's wrong with you if you're not an AP fan. But, yeah, so to see him kind of continuing with this this level is it's a positive sign for his career. Number five is Ken Roczen, and that was a disastrous St. Louis. No question about it. The bike failure, not his fault. Yeah, just a really tough weekend overall. You know, he had to ride his backup bike in the second race, and he was not comfortable with it at all. He kind of just rode around. And that's a tough thing. You know, I don't think that I could just jump on a second bike without any sort of warm-up on it and trust it to go to the speeds that they go. Like, I understand what Kenny was dealing with. That couldn't have been any fun at all. I think you'll see a bounce back from him here in Foxborough. Number four, Eli Tomac, we touched on. Great ride from him. Number three, Chase Sexton. Number two, Cooper Webb. And number one, Jet Lawrence. And I'm skipping through those because I obviously covered all of them in depth. But that is your top 10 for the week. I have an honorable mention of Malcolm Stewart. He did get a seventh place finish in St. Louis. So I don't want to completely remove him, but it's been a really tough 2024. There is no other way to categorize it than that, in my opinion. He just hasn't had a good year, you know, just has not been good, period. End of story. I say end of story too much, I think. But I don't know. I just don't think he's been happy with the bike. And the results have not come for what we should be expecting from a talent like Malcolm Stewart. So that's it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And we will talk to you. I promise you, we will talk to you sooner this week than last time. See you.